News, sports, AccuWeather, and more. Wake up with the information you need on WKOK Sunrise on News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com.
Thank you so much for joining us on WKOK Sunrise. Rob Center is on the other side of the glass. That's his appointed place each weekday morning. So we're always grateful and appreciative for his help and hard work making everything go superlatively. On the news line with us now, I am so glad to welcome back to the news line. She's talked to us either in person or telephonically about a half a dozen times and really kept us up to date on the goings-on in impact economy, I call that. That's the economy that wavers and changes that impacts us. Dr. Stacy Mastroli, an associate professor of accounting at the Freeman College of Management at Bucknell University. Always honored to talk to you, Stacy. Thank you so much for calling in.
Good morning, Mark. You flatter me, but I'm glad to speak with you again as well.
I really am. It's all 100% true, I assure you. I just think it's a great honor. We'd love to see you again. I know you'll be here in person as time permits, and so we're looking forward to that. And plus, we can do the Friday talk show with Ben Reichley. He's a business person that always has a good set of questions to talk to you about. So we'll do that again in the months ahead as well. We see in national news the U.S. debt ceiling. We've already gone past the debt ceiling. We're into the extraordinary measures, and Congress is doing its dysfunction thing, so that is happening. Down at the consumer level, as I watch this, is there anything I should know about, do, be aware of? Explain what the debt ceiling means to me.
Yeah, so you guys had a great speaker on last week talking about the debt ceiling and did a really good job of explaining what it is and kind of how we got here. So, the debt ceiling was implemented by Congress to allow the U.S. Treasury some wiggle room and not needing to get Congress's approval for each and every debt issue. So they gave them, like a credit limit, as we would understand it. Our credit card gives us a credit limit. Congress gave the Treasury a credit limit. The underlying problem is Congress doesn't have a balanced budget, so they constantly run up against that credit limit because only about 80% of government spending is financed by taxes and other income that the Treasury gets. The other 20% of actual spending, of approved congressional spending, is financed by debt. So the debt will continue to grow. Same would be true of our budgets if we only had 80% of our spending, our contractual spending was covered by our earnings. So to the average citizen, which is where my specialty is. My specialty is not in macroeconomics. To the individual consumer, right now we're just in a holding pattern, and we're going to experience a tremendous amount of volatility because there's a lot of unknowns in the market because the inflexible people in Congress are going to use this as a point of brinkmanship, likely. One party is going to hold the debt ceiling increase hostage to the other party spending habits. So we're going to experience a lot of volatility because the market's going to try and figure out what that means. Secretary Yellen has indicated that the government can continue to operate under these extraordinary measures until which aren't actually all that extraordinary until June. So between now and June, the Treasury is going to reduce or eliminate some of the payments that they make towards investments related to retirement. That sounds scary, but in the end, assuming the debt ceiling is raised, and as your talk last week was, there's really no legitimate other option, then they'll go back and they'll recoup those investments. So in the end, theoretically, the American people individually aren't affected that much. The problem is the market will experience a lot of volatility in the meantime.
And should I do anything because of that? I think you are one of the good people that's told us from time to time, sort of keep your eye on the long term when it comes to anything you're monitoring or changing or investing or 401ks, things like that. You know, don't worry about what happens today or tomorrow. Just think about what happens in the years ahead.
Yeah, and I still say that to the extent that you have years ahead. I think it's a little more nerve-wracking for people who are maybe looking to retire in the next, certainly, year, 3 years, because come June, when this period where the secretary can use these extraordinary measures and still pay the bills, as June approaches, we're likely going to experience something similar to what we experienced back in 2011 with a government shutdown. That's when individuals start to really be affected, because you may work for a part of the government that's deemed non-essential. And post-COVID, I think we all found out that, well, most of us are non-essential in different ways. So there's parts of the government that they're going to start to turn off in order to fund the bills that need to be paid. So from an investment standpoint, it's always true in a period of volatility, you know, dollar cost averaging, you buy all while the market's going up, buy all while the market's going down, take your money out the same way. But for some people, you know, they're in treasuries, they're in U.S. backed investments, and they're there because they already believe the market's too volatile, so they're giving up the return to give up that risk. And now it seems that that's risky. So I guess to those people, I would say that the government has never failed to pay their bills, the U.S. government. Could they? Sure. Will they? I just don't know what congressman wants to go down in history as the person who broke the U.S. economy. So I think it's going to get uglier as we get closer to the summer. And you've just got to stay the course or bail now.
We are talking to Professor Stacy Mistroli, an accounting professor at Bucknell University. We've spoken to you on a number of occasions at the beginning of the year, any sound advice, sort of the New Year's resolution kind of idea. I guess I would add the caveat to this year that there's lots of conversation about a recession, and there's folks that say we're still in good shape and we probably won't hit a recession, and other folks say we will. Does that change my practices at all? Anything I should or shouldn't do if the economy is changing?
Yeah, so I guess that bad me, I should have prefaced this with, obviously I'm not giving advice, I'm just giving information given my CPA license. You know, we never know when we start the year what that year's volatility is going to look like. This year we've got a little bit better glimpse that we know it's going to be a bit of a wild ride. Again, if you're 5 to 10 years from retirement, I don't think your plan necessarily changes, but each person has to be able to sleep at night with the decisions that they make. So if a person is more risk averse, then they may choose to take some of their money out of the market for a period of time. Not a good long-term strategy, because if you don't stay invested in the market and you have a long term to invest, and by that I mean more than like 5 to 10 years, inflation will kick you from behind. And we are definitely looking at unusually high inflation, and that'll continue for, according to the Federal Reserve Bank bank presidents, will continue for, quote, a long time. So we need to be invested in the market to beat inflation for a long time.
In terms of my personal finances, what is an appropriate reaction to high inflation? What do professors and economists talk about as ideas?
Yeah, so from an investment standpoint, you know, you try and have a diversified portfolio, and mutual funds do a really good job of helping everyone diversify, because you get a share of the pie that is 500 or 1,000 or 2,000 or 10,000 stocks, right? So you get multiple stocks when you invest in a mutual fund. And, you know, normal diversification practices would have you across markets. So the United States market and the international market would have you across stock sizes. So big companies, medium companies, little companies. We call that cap, market cap, so capitalization, small cap, large cap, medium cap. And you know, they have varying degrees of risk, so you should experience varying degrees of return. If you're a little more conservative right now, a little more worried about the economy, then you might stay more towards a large cap fund, the bigger companies. You might stay more towards the U.S. market and stay a little bit more away from the international market. I mean, heck, I have enough trouble figuring out what's going on in California, much less Greece. So those are some kind of small adjustments you can make to your portfolio while still leaving your funds invested. Again, this is information, not advice. While still leaving your funds invested in the market to try and outpace, we're still above 6% for inflation, 6.5% for consumer price index inflation.
Right, we still have high inflation. There's still some things that continue to go up. My lovely bride comes home from the store every week and says everything's high. So I know what she means. All right. Well, please stand by. I'm going to put you on hold. You can wait on hold, or if you'd like, you can hang up and call back, and Rob will reconnect you when the time comes at 7:40 when we resume. Professor Mastrolia, thank you so much for the first half of our conversation. Much appreciated.
Thank you, Mark.
I'm going to put you on hold. And she is an associate professor of accounting in the Freeman College of Management at Bucknell University. I invite you to do what I did before our call today. Go back, go to WKOK.com, search for Mastrolia on our list, and listen to some of her previous interviews. You could really come up with a pretty decent compendium of good advice, and or not advice, but information, as she points out, about our economy and how to monitor changes in the economy and how it impacts us. So it's like you're riding us on the surf of the ocean. You can ride things up or you can have a wave go over you, but there's different ways to prepare for some of these things economically. Professor Stracey Mastrolia returns at 7:40. We are halfway through our interview with Dr. Stacey Mastrolia, an associate professor of accounting at the Freeman College of Management at Bucknell University. We've relied on her in recent years to really talk about trends and things that relate to the economy, but specifically as it relates to maybe our checkbook, how it relates to us and our buying practices, and so on. You must have had an interesting past couple of years if you've been keeping an eye on what consumers do at street level. We talk about the pandemic where buying was muted and then the spring back shortly thereafter, plus the inflation. I guess before I get into another question, just a quick reaction to, you know, this is your time if you like to watch consumers sort of act collectively, Stacey.
Yeah, these have been these are interesting times, and there's fortunately a lot of studies and a lot of people who are, you know, questioning and looking at how people spend money. I think the thing it gives us most is we don't feel alone, right? I mean, if you feel like your lovely bride, every time I go to the store, it's more expensive. If you feel that way and you're feeling the pinch and having to find new ways to make the budget work, you're not alone. And I think there's comfort in that, because certainly coming through COVID, we felt really isolated. And, you know, these challenges that we're facing with the debt ceiling and how that's going to affect us personally, or inflation and how that affects our pocketbooks, you're not alone.
Yeah, she comes back and says, everything's up, and then I look at the receipt and I say, everything blank up, because it's just, you know, really, really crazy. All right, so what are some of the activities and practices that consumers often overlook? This doesn't necessarily relate to our economic situation right at the moment, but just sort of what are activities that people do sometimes as consumers that make you wonder or furrow your brow, that are maybe something we're overlooking, some information for consumers?
Well, you know, as managers of our own households, we kind of only have three things that we work with. We work with our wages, we work with our spending, we work with our debt. And right now we're being squeezed on all fronts. So there are surveys that have gone out recently where 40% of people believe unemployment's going to be higher in the coming year, so we need to make sure that we've got, you know, as much stability and, frankly, cross-application of income as we can. So if you own something that you can rent out, if you can protect your income with a side hustle, if you feel, you know, your income is in danger, certainly we can be doing things on the wage front. Spending, everything is up. Last night, in preparation for today, I went and I looked up the 2021 median household income in Pennsylvania is about $68,000. The U.S. Congress Joint Economic Committee each month puts out the inflation since January of 21, so 2 years ago, because that's really when inflation started. And in Pennsylvania, we're paying about $600 more a month due to inflation over the past 2 years. So $600 a month, $7,200 a year, that's almost 11%, 10.5% of the median household income. So our costs have gone up over the past 2 years by 10%. And things that we can do to lower those costs, I think we spend a lot of time on the smaller things, you know, like eggs are up by 60%. God bless them, but eggs cost $5 or $6 or $7. Your car insurance costs hundreds of dollars. Your homeowner's insurance costs hundreds of dollars. So focus on where you can make more impact. If you've lived in your house for more than a couple of years, you're probably actually underinsured because housing values have gone up by so much. So I think that there's areas like insurance that we don't look at very often where we might be able to reap better rewards by pricing it around more so than, you know, driving to one grocery store or another for $6 eggs. And then, of course, the last piece is debt. So wages, spending, and debt. You know, everything that's happening with interest rates going up, the Treasury has identified 5%, at minimum of 5% is their target rate. And they'll be there soon, so we're at 4.5% already. And it could go above 5%. So that affects credit card payments. That affects any kind of variable debt if you have a HELOC, a home equity loan. You know, you need to worry, concern yourself with being able to pay those off as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I recently saw one farmer at a farmer's market was selling eggs for $2 a dozen, and he said, well, this is what it cost me to produce them and make them and my insurance and everything else, so I'm not going to charge more. But he was sort of immune to what the national avian flu had done to prices and mass farmers, but those are few and far between. But yeah, maybe farmer's markets would be part of that array of places where folks were shop that you talked about, rather than just always going to the same place at the same time. Is the U.S. government setting a terrible example in any way? We kind of thought they were when we talked about student loan forgiveness, or I did anyway, when we had a conversation where opinions were a greater part of our conversation. But to this day, does the U.S. government set a good or a bad example in the way that they spend, you know, continuing to borrow from our great-great-grandchildren?
You know, personally, my personal opinion, I find it hard to find things that Congress is setting a good example with. They squabble like school children and, you know, can't manage to find compromise, although that's what we sent them to Washington to do, make progress and find compromise, and they can't. And that's what's on the news all the time, right? I agree the way the student loan forgiveness, it's obviously not decided, we talked about that last time, is rolling out is basically people sign a contract and, you know, that contract is unilaterally negated, and that would be fine if the person negating it was also picking up the tab, but they're not, the taxpayer's picking up the tab. And I didn't get to the number, but the number for the debt ceiling, which has, you know, obviously been hit, $94,000 for every breathing American, every infant, every school child, every grandparent, $94,000 a piece. So I'm hard pressed to find anything that Congress is doing right lately.
And not to be flip, but so what? So they're terrible examples. I do a good example. I keep my debt, spending, and wages where they should be locally. Does it matter to me how dysfunctional Congress is?
You know, I have a 13-year-old daughter, and I believe that my example is more present to her than necessarily Congress's example. I mean, I hate to just throw up my hands and wash myself of them, but on a day-to-day basis, showing her hard work and the value of a dollar and managing our household within our budget, you know, I have to have hope for the next generation, because the burden that we're leaving them for the bad decisions that have been really made in the past 30 or 40 years, because that's when, you know, the debt exploded since 1982. So the federal debt, you know, I can only hope that, you know, they'll We can teach them to do better.
Okay, and does this might also require you to give a personal opinion that isn't necessarily based on all the good empirical studies you've done on the economy and so on. Does our voting impact our economy? I see a sign out front here, don't blame me, I voted for President Trump, you know, but I guess you could see other folks say when President Trump was in office, I voted for Hillary Clinton, you know, don't blame me. Does voting impact our personal finances?
It does. It absolutely does. Although it's hard to see, I think our voting impacts our local politics, obviously, more than maybe our national politics. But seeing as most of our national politicians come from local politicians, maybe, you know, some more careful selection in our local politicians, who then grow to be our governors and our senators and eventually our president, maybe that would be helpful. I don't know. I because again, I don't do macroeconomics. I think because I find it a lot less impactful. I can impact macroeconomic policies a lot less than I can impact households or microeconomic policies.
Anything else we should discuss? Something I did not ask you that's pretty relevant for us to talk about right now?
No, I mean, I think really at the household level, protecting your wages, controlling your spending as best as you can, and managing debt. Those are the three things we're looking at seriously between now and June, when we will 50-50 find that the Congress will not have decided on the debt, and then we're going to experience yet more volatility. Volatility, if you choose to stay in the stock market, just continue to dollar cost average and don't look at the balances, because you know, it was a wild ride back in 2008 for completely different reasons, but the way it tends to work is it cycles, and we will come through this cycle likely, and our 401k balances will all recover. We're affected very little, assuming you're not involved in a government shutdown. We're affected very little by these macroeconomic policies in the long term, but in the short term, it can be scary.
Yeah, the potential government shutdown. So we've got to say that. Okay. Stacy, thank you so much for all the information. We look forward to seeing you here again. I get on the Bucknell campus from time to time as well, so we'll look you up when we get over there and continue our conversations and keep us informed about any developments worth talking about. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. This was wonderful.
Thank you. Professor Stacy Mistrolia, back on the news line, an associate professor of accounting in the Freeman College of Management at Bucknell University. Honestly, I think it might be, if you are concerned about your own personal finances, you may want to, you know, of course, listen to this podcast again as time permits, but then go back and look at some of our previous appearances. Stacy is her spelling name. You can search that at wkok.com and search through our podcast for previous conversations with us.